Well, we are approaching what is, in my view, the holiest day in American secular democracy, and that is our great national day of communion, where people come together and, in a sense, by being present at the ballot box and taking away that little sticker that says, I voted, receive their communion in the exercise of democracy. Now, I mixed up this sermon about democracy and faith for a reason, because I think that all of these things really follow an awful lot of the ways that we deal with religion in this country. We have this great national communion, and then having slogged through the mud and the muck and the mire to get to it, we have baptism after the communion, where after all of those negative ads, where you are asked to decide, are you going to be with the liberal elitists, or are you going to be with the morons? Are you going to be with those people who really hate America and want the terrorists to win, or those other people who really hate America and will sell it out to the highest bidder? All of those ways that we demonize and work at destroying the other instead of listening to what we have in common, all of these things make us want to go and take a shower, particularly after the last week. I don't know about you, but this has been, in some ways, a wonderful weekend for me. It is so seldom, really, that I sit home and then I answer the telephone and Arnold calls me and he tells me fantastic things he's going to do for California. And then Robert Redford called me and I was so excited I yelled for my wife, Robert Redford's on the phone, honey. And Paul Newman called, and I bought 3 cases of salad dressing, which is going to be a new form of anointing with oil. I'm sorry, it should have been a question mark that I was anointing with oil. And who else? Everybody is called. I just feel so important, had it really been real people and not recorded messages. And then I've also been push-polled. You know what push-polling is? Push-polling is, I'm conducting a poll here for this great committee, and I want to know, would you still vote for candidate X if you knew that he was a child molester? Now, notice that the poll is not saying he is a child molester. It says, would you still vote for him if you knew that he were? And variations of this kind of tight grammar are all over the place. Logic chopping, half-truths that cover up three-quarter lies. I have found out this week that I am quoted in a hit piece against two people running for the Board of Education, where one of my articles in the Fullerton Observer accurately quoted, completely misapplied. And, of course, I don't have a copyright. They can use my material because it is part of a record, and they're not doing... Here's what's so great about copyright law. Had they quoted the entire article, I could sue them. If they take it out of context, I can't. You know? This is... there are wonderful things about the copyright laws that I really enjoy. Did you know that you can't copyright a book title? You can't copyright a book title. So my next book, Gone with the Wind, which now that I think about it is an awfully good title for a sermon collection. But you can't copyright this material. You can just do whatever you want with it. It's all a very strange world where we can lie about our candidates so that who wants to run? Who wants to run if you are going to be examined? Every word, every mistake. Who amongst us is without sin to cast that first stone? Politics begins with the stoning. well, much as my generation did now that I think about it, but a different context. But I never inhaled, which is a little bit like this guy who went for the massage and the methamphetamines, but never inhaled. It's not the acts, people. It's the hypocrisy. It's when we take and we take facts out of context and we make bigger lies out of them that not only smear the candidates, not only harm the candidates, but harm our democracy. I do take our democracy to be like religion at its best, something sacred. It's got lots of problems, and I'll go into some of them, but it is still, as Churchill said, the worst system of government except for all of the other ones. Because with all of its flaws, and I'll get to them, it is still the best chance that we have to make a difference in how society treats the least amongst us and those with the most amongst us, how we treat the weaker nations and how we treat the stronger nations. We have a voice. But democracy takes faith. In order for democracy to work, because there are lots of countries that have a constitution that looks very much like ours, but they are not democracies. There are times when areas of this nation are not democracies, anticipating at least three comments during the talk back. And that's nonpartisan, because we can take Chicago with all of those politically active dead Democrats, or we can take Florida with all those amazingly pro-Buchanan older Jewish people and say something is on a bipartisan way not right with the system. But democracy takes a certain amount of faith. It's faith that our vote will count, will be counted, will make a difference. Faith that when we vote, we are voting for someone who is going to do something like she or he says that she or he is going to do, at least vaguely related to it, and that we will, as a community, as a nation, abide by the results and not do what has gone on in Mexico and gone on in many other countries and say, we just don't accept the vote, and so we're going to not recognize the government and we're going to take to the streets. I know it's a temptation. I have to tell you that there have been elections where I wanted to take to the streets. But the bottom line is that when we believe that we will be allowed to survive to the next election and we have a chance at a fair count at the next election and having our will expressed at the next election, that part of our commitment is to wait and to work to make our vision come true. The monsterization, the demonizing of opposition is something that, while it has always gone on, because of the strength of communication, the echo chamber of certain websites and of talk radio, they reinforce a sense of anger and of alienation from the process on both sides. More and more people do not believe that the system is essentially fair, that candidates are more honest than not, that their votes will count and be counted. Yes, everybody who believes in democracy has been disappointed from time to time. Liberals very disappointed when they voted for Johnson and got Goldwater. Conservatives very disappointed that much of the conservative social and financial agenda has not at all been dealt with this soi-disant conservative regime. In fact, it's a fairly radical regime, for whatever that's worth. and old-line conservatives are very unhappy. But to the extent that we begin to believe that the democracy is a sham, that our votes will not count, that it is just government and the same old government all of the time, to that extent, we start to withdraw even more. To that extent, people stop voting and stop caring and become cynical. And cynicism is the ultimate enemy of democracy. When I write columns and I get occasional angry mail and sometimes even hate mail, my response is almost always the same. I may be your adversary, but you are not my adversary if you think about the issue, make a judgment about the issue, and care about the issue. My adversary is the person who has given up, who stays home, who believes it doesn't make any difference. According to Nietzsche and also Sprach Zarathustra, when they come in and say, God is dead, God is not dead yet, but God is going to become dead because people have stopped caring. God, and yes, Tinkerbell, and yes, democracy, all require the active belief of the people in order to come to life. 25-30% of eligible voters voting is a national shame and a crime. People have died for the right to vote. We don't get to say our vote doesn't make any difference. We can say, I'm disappointed. We can say, this candidate let me down. We can say, this process is really dirty and makes me feel dirty, and I am sometimes embarrassed. Hey, that's life. Sometimes our own families embarrass us. Sometimes we embarrass ourselves. We have to live with these things, with the imperfections of democracy. Democracy, according to Aristotle, could fall apart in a couple of ways. One is towards a mobocracy, where it just goes to the people and their immediate passions, which is a terribly dangerous place. Democracy being inefficient is not necessarily a bad thing. It is a stay against the passion of a mob when it is all head up and ready to destroy. There are a couple of candidates of various parties who are saying, every vote I take, I'm going to put out there on the websites of my constituents and I'll vote the way they tell me. What a horrible idea. Would be rather like my asking each of you what position I should take on a sermon. I mean, I might rhetorically be able to do something, but it would not be real and it would not be right. When we elect people, we are trying to elect people who represent our judgment and our values as opposed to just being malleable to and responsive to the popular will of a mob. And we have often been a mob, and I have often been part of a mob. I need to be stayed against affecting my policies in the immediate moment. The other way that democracy fades, according to Aristotle, is towards oligarchy, towards the control of a few, the wealthy, the powerful. I think the proof of America is that you can be both a mobocracy and an oligarchy at the same time. And they are not mutually contradictory. They're mutually not healthy, but they're not contradictory. The response is to be involved. The response is to care. The response to keeping our democracy is not letting it fade away. It is not the great enemies out there who want to destroy democracy that will let a democracy die. It is the disheartened, those who feel dispossessed, those who do not believe that getting up on Tuesday and going to vote will make a difference in the future of this nation. If you think voting is tough, try violent revolution, because those are the only options that we have to keep our nation reflective somewhat of our differing values. But I think that across a political spectrum, there is far more that unites us than divides us. For all of the demonization that goes on between the parties, we have an extraordinarily narrow political spectrum. Next to Europe, we have, well, they joke that we have Republican Party, which is the in England, they joke that we have the Republican Party, which is the equivalent to their Tories, and we have the Democratic Party, which is equivalent to their Tories. We are not about these radicals out here and radicals out there. We are a centrist nation, and we are not separated across a huge chasm. There are very few Americans that want our children to die in a foreign land. There are very few Americans who want our children to die on the streets of our cities from gangs or for terror. These are not partisan issues. These are not issues where a party says, oh, it's wonderful for them to die. We are not a land that is really broken apart across ideological lines. We are far more a country, for better or worse, that is chemically dependent for our vote. We vote for people we like. We vote for people that come across on the screen. That may be very bad reasons to vote. But we are not really very ideological. Idiotic at times, but not ideological. We will vote for people who give us a sense that they are genuine, something that almost every politician has forgotten to do because they are so busy trying to be attractive that they are no longer willing to be real. We were last week in Palm Springs. Can you imagine where I'm going with this? We were walking down El Paseo, and in between the decorating stores and the jewelry stores were 100 retail places to get your face done and your body done and various parts of your body done. I ran into an old friend who is a major decorator guy there, who I've known for probably close to 30 years. His face looked younger than it did when I met him. His hands had aged terribly, but they're going to be taken care of next week. We have so much plastic and nipping and tucking to please other people's ideas of who we should be in our political system, that it is little wonder that we don't know for whom we are voting. We don't recognize what is genuine. We look at people and we see all of the hypocrisies. We see the people who, whether politically or religiously, preach one thing and live something else. And so we don't know that we are getting a truth. We don't know if the rule of large numbers really works, that if you take all of the distortions and all of the negativities and have all of the people vote our instincts, will it result in wisdom? And I don't know. I have been disappointed, but I continue like the most religious person to believe. I believe in democracy. I believe that my vote counts. I believe that my checks to political causes make a difference. I believe that my passion makes a difference. I believe that the world is amenable to my efforts. Doesn't mean completely responsible. responsive. It doesn't mean that I get my way. It means that I believe at the level of my participation, I am heard. And that is enough, because there is no other form of governance that I think is better. Yes, Aristotle also says the best form of government is a benign tyranny. That's terrific. Vote me the tyrant, and I promise I'll be nice. That's not the way the record runs either, because a lot of idealistic people became heads of governments and could not relinquish their grip and their grasp and became paranoid and became restrictive and became violent. It is the voice of the people that offers not certainty, but hope. It is elections that offer us the opportunity to be involved in a process. And it also is something that calls upon people to actually run for office, as one person in this congregation is doing, and he's had dirty tricks played on him. And he's wondering why he chose to do these things. And that's a terrible thing. It's a terrible thing when people, even good people, say, you know, I'm a good guy, but I can't be a good guy unless I'm elected. And I can't be elected unless I destroy Brad. And surely destroying Brad is a small price to pay for being elected and for all of the good things that I'm going to do. No, that doesn't work. The question that comes up in Brothers Karamazov is, if you could assure the end of despotism and pain and war, and all you would have to do is sacrifice one completely innocent person, would it be worthwhile? And everybody immediately says, yes, of course, assuming that they are not that one person who is being sacrificed. And then you say, okay, how about two? How about four? How about eight? Is it any number under 49.9%? When it's right, it's right. When it's wrong, it's wrong. And we need a sense, again, of honor and of rules and of belief and of accountability, but most of all, of passion and participation from more and more people. The number of people, the percentage of qualified voters who actually vote, is a national scandal. The enemies of democracy are not the other party. That's not even Al-Qaeda. It's people who sit here and say, it doesn't make a difference, I don't make a difference. Because that is 100% true, if you believe it. Believing that you will make a difference is not a certainty, but it is a possibility, and it is the moral choice that gives us a chance, each of us, to be saviors of democracy when we go to communion as Americans on Tuesday.